Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Soaring fuel and fertilizer prices are hitting Utah farmers who are already facing tight times. BYU pumps the brakes on a sweeping curriculum overhaul after faculty feedback. And days after an Indigenous student sued, BYU now says it will not require him to cut his traditional braids. Later in the program, we're going to be talking with Salt Lake Tribune religion reporter Tamara Kemsley and reporter Courtney Tanner. Right now, for the first segment, we bring in Salt Lake Tribune data enterprise reporter Megan Banta. Megan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Good to have you on. So you and your colleague Brock Marchant did this story about farmers. Of course, worrisome times with prices rising for everybody, right? But really hitting farmers. You and Brock talked to several farmers. What are they saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, people, obviously everybody's feeling gas prices right now, but farmers are feeling it in, you know, a different way. I think a lot of people, when they think about, you know, farming in Utah, they think about alfalfa, and that is big. You know, you think about fertilizer for that. But transport prices are also a big deal right now. You know, farmers have to transport whatever they grow or animals that they raise. And, you know, one told us that, you know, they can't just pass those prices along. That comes right out of their pocket. So as diesel goes up and fertilizer gets more expensive, they're feeling it directly.
So several people you talked to reminded us that a lot of farmers are operating on a very small margin. This is a very bad time to have increased prices.
Yeah, you know, they already were facing crop prices that have been coming down. You know, for a lot of them, thankfully, they're pretty diversified and animal prices are still pretty high. You know, they can get good money for their cattle or for the dairy they produce or sheep, but they were already really hurting.
One operation you talked to in Cache Valley said they often use 1,000 gallons a week during peak seasons. So with diesel up 40%, that's really going to hit you.
Yeah, it is, and that's even when you're talking about the red dye diesel that they get, you know, a tax break on for off-road purposes, but that's still going up too.
So there's a difference. I'm reading from your story. I guess dairy farmers, those with cattle, doing a little better than those who are raising alfalfa, et cetera.
Yeah, that's just because, you know, I mean, and I feel like we all see it in the grocery store. Beef prices are up, so they're able to make more as they're raising cattle than they are from crops.
So fertilizer prices are really going up. Can farmers use less fertilizer? Can they change to crops that don't use as much fertilizer?
Yeah, they can. When I chatted with the president of the state's Farm Bureau, you know, he talked about corn is really nitrogen heavy, needs a lot of fertilizer. So some farmers who haven't planted yet or who are just getting ready to plant are kind of reevaluating and looking to maybe plant something different. Not plant corn or onions and plant something else that uses less fertilizer. And people who planted in the fall are looking to stretch the fertilizer that they have and, you know, maybe put on less or skip putting it on at all.
I was just reading from your story here. Hay, Utah's most prevalent crop, averaged $294 per ton in 2022, is down to $222 in 2023.
Yeah, that, you know, like I was saying earlier, the price of crops and hay, especially as we're looking at it, has was kind of on a rise and then has been coming down. That's the most recent data we could find. And according to the state, probably the most recent we're going to see for a while because the USDA isn't gathering data the same way anymore.
Mm. Utah Farm Bureau said it's a little problematic if, say, farmers decide not to plant corn, which uses more fertilizer. that Utah might not produce enough food for Utah. Of course, you know, the economy is bigger than that. You import it from other places, but if you want to be self-sufficient, that'd be a problem.
Valjay told us we already don't plant and already don't produce enough food. Just probably because of the way that planting in a desert, we mostly have hay. A lot of the food that we are planting is animal feed. But if we're not able to even plant the corn that we do, some of that is animal feed. A lot of it is like human grade corn, though. If we can't do that, then it's really hard to be self-sufficient. We got to import a lot more, and farmers here don't make as much.
You mentioned before the transportation costs, not only of higher diesel on the farm, running your tractors, etc., but you got to transport your crop or cattle to market.
Especially cattle, that's really big here, cattle raising and sheep rearing. And like Valjay told us, most of the cows that are raised here, they aren't slaughtered here. They're transported somewhere else to, become the steak that you buy in the grocery store. And they don't go on those trucks for free.
So we've been hearing about the Trump administration's tariffs. Is that hitting farmers in Utah?
Yeah, that had already been hitting them. I think they've kind of been able to deal with that. But once you add on the winter that we've had or not really had at this point, and all of these other costs, it's just compiling.
The Trump administration did announce some help for farmers, $12 billion through the Farmer Bridge Assistance Program. Is that going to help Utah farmers?
It will help some, but with the way that it's distributed, a lot of that money will go to the Midwest, and areas where you can grow cotton, rice, and different kinds of crops.
What about the water situation that's hitting everybody, I think probably including farmers?
If you can't water your crops and you can't fertilize your crops, it's just going to be a bad situation. You can't get the same yield that they've gotten in previous years.
You quote at the end of your story the American Farm Bureau president who sent a letter to President Trump, and he worries about a generational decline in farm income.
I think as we've been talking about, farmers are already facing that, which is why this $12 billion bridge assistance program is such a big deal. But farmers just want something to happen. The Strait of Hormuz being closed is really hurting them.
At least one of the farmers, this is the Clausens in, I think it's Hiram, maybe, the couple of brothers, they said, hey, if it continues on this trajectory, we might just have to shut down the farm.
And that's unfortunately pretty common these days. When I was talking with the Utah Farm Bureau president, he said he heard something like at least a half a dozen farms are closing pretty regularly across the country.
Oh, Megan Banta telling us about this story. Let's move to another story. Here's the headline. Utah didn't take action on hidden rental fees this year. The feds might. So what kind of hidden rental fees are we talking about?
When you go to sign a lease, you've seen the apartment advertised, maybe at like $1,200 a month. And you go, and as you're chatting with the leasing agent and everything, you see, oh, like I also need to pay an amenity fee for the pool or the internet, and I'm going to be charged for the community-wide water, things like that. And it ends up adding up to like several hundred dollars a month, for a lot of people, and just making it really hard to find something that's actually within your budget.
And for people who can barely afford the advertised rent, the list becomes a real problem.
Yeah, for sure.
So what was Utah considering? There was a bill run that I think didn't pass.
Yeah. So House Bill 29 was run by Tyler Clancy, who's now going to be heading up the Office of Homeless Services. And those efforts across the state ran a bill that would have made it so if you're advertising, I mean, anything really, but kind of definitely most of the conversation focused around apartment rentals, you have to include mandatory fees. So some things like utilities, not clear whether that would have been included, but anything that the landlord would have controlled, how much is charged, would have had to be included in the advertised price so that people could see, you know, oh, I'll have to pay $100 a month for my Wi-Fi and, you know, weigh that against whether they wanted to look somewhere else.
Now, this it was interesting. This passed overwhelmingly in the House and died in the Senate. Do we know? Has any senator spoken out to why they didn't prioritize this bill?
No, not yet. I mean, and when I got a little bit of a response from Clancy, who said, you know, that it was a really good bipartisan effort, and while the bill might have died, the issue was, you know, still under discussion. But yeah, it didn't even get a Senate committee hearing, so we haven't heard anything.
So the Federal Trade Commission is, I guess, talking about doing something on this.
Yeah, they want to hear from people about rental fees because they're considering making like a rule, which would mean that it's just easier for them to take like civil action against people who are technically violating the law by kind of just like deceptive advertising. But you know, they want to hear from people to see how necessary it is.
You talked to some folks. I think there was one couple that was about to sign a lease, and then they noticed these hidden fees. I guess, and probably some people have actually signed the lease and then discovered this.
Yeah, when I wrote the initial story about the bill, I chatted with a few people, and you know, we also had put out a survey and just heard from a lot of people talking about, you know, how much they pay in fees and how it varies every single month, and how it just makes searching for an apartment really hard because if you're on a limited budget and you suddenly discover that you're going to be on the hook for another, I mean, even another $100 a month, for some people, that's a real stretch.
Now, the FTC has gone after a couple of organizations for deceptive practices, I think.
Yeah, they have. They've gone after some really big ones. So Invitation Homes is the largest single family rent like housing, like a detached home rental provider in the country. And Greystar is a pretty big one. Like I rented from them in Oregon. And they have several properties here in Utah, and I know they have a couple like where I lived in Michigan too. And they both of them had other issues, but the allegations included that they were not advertising the mandatory fees. And in some cases, their mandatory fees are pretty high.
Now you have a link for where to go to get comments to the FTC in your story to check that out at sltrib.com. You say people can also comment on related topics, like what?
Yeah, just kind of whether landlords, you know, not just are they advertising the full rent, but are they telling you exactly what your fees are covering? Are they very vague? Is it like utility administration, and that you don't actually know what you're paying for, or you know, are they not returning security deposits that they should be returning, or keeping back large amounts of security deposits for things that they shouldn't be charging, or really in any kind of other way, just harming consumers?
Anything else you want to say about this story?
No, I mean, I think it's just, yeah, I something that not everybody thinks about, but that can affect a lot of people.
I guess message for listeners, be on the lookout for these kind of things right before you sign.
Yeah, definitely read all, you know, all the 50 pages that they put in front of you when you're signing a lease.
Yeah, we tend not to do that, but I guess it'll be important to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Megan Banta, a data enterprise reporter for the Salt Lake Tribune, has been with us. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
We are going to go to a break soon. We recorded yesterday the other two segments, so we'll say goodbye to Megan Band today. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Have a good one.
You too. You are listening to Behind the Headlines, weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. Following a break, we are going to be talking with religion reporter Tamara Kemsley. Here's the headline: BYU pumps the brakes on sweeping curriculum overhaul after faculty feedback. And later in the program, days after an Indigenous student sued, BYU now says it will not require him to cut his traditional braids. We'll be talking with reporter Courtney Tanner. Before we head to break, just a reminder that this is the UPR Spring Fun Drive. In fact, it's the last day of the drive. So we have arrived at the last day. Urgency is high. Your opportunity is high to really make an impact with Utah Public Radio. We began today closer to our goal. Our overall goal was $75,000. That's more than we have had in the previous spring drives because we need to raise more money to make up for the loss of federal funding. So we have raised about, or had at the beginning of this day, raised about $65,000. So thank you. A big, big thank you to you if you participated in that. Leaving about $10,000 or so to raise by the end of the day today. So we want to make that goal by the end of the day. Just hours left in the drive now. It closes at 7 o'clock tonight. So you can participate today with in whatever amount. We'll love to have you on board. Perhaps consider increasing your amount to help us, of course, with that loss of federal funding and to continue UPR strong into the future. Looking for an additional $10,000 or so. You don't have to provide all of that, just a bit of that. And we've had calls all over during the week and certainly this morning. Great response. Want to keep this going, of course, and reach this goal by 7 o'clock tonight. Here's how you can join us. 800-826-1495. 800-826-1495. 800-826-1495, the call, or go to upr.org. That's upr.org. Take a look at the thank you gifts on the website, upr.org, or ask the operator when you call 800-826-1495. But your gift today helps to secure the future for Utah Public Radio. It helps to pay for great programs like Behind the Headlines. We would love to have you on board, and definitely we want to gather as a community today and reach that goal. We're about $10,000 away. We could chip away at that by the end of the drive tonight. 800-826-1495 or upr.org, and thank you.
As six women forge a lifelong friendship at a beauty salon, one of them decides to risk everything to start a family.
Diabetics have healthy babies all the time.
You are special. There are limits to what you can do.
Frances Fisher, Brittany Snow, and Amy Pete star in Steel Magnolias by Robert Harling. Next time on LA Theater Works.
Tune in Friday night at 9 here on UPR.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. This week we have a chef who wants to cook at home and a home cook more obsessed than any chef, both with inspiring new cookbooks. It's Ham El Whaley and Ella Quittner with their books, Hello Home Cooking and Obsessed with the Best. It's coming up on The Splendid Table.
Tune in Sunday at noon after eating the past here on UPR.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams, and we are talking in this part of the program with religion reporter Tamara Kemsley. Tamara, thank you so much.
Hey, Tom.
Good to have you with us. So, interesting report out of BYU. Here's the headline. BYU pumps the brakes on sweeping curriculum overhaul after faculty feedback. So what is BYU proposing here?
In February, Academic Vice President Justin Collins, who came over a little less than 3 years ago from the law school, he has proposed that the entire general education program be overhauled at BYU. These are for the undergraduates. And in currently, as it stands, an undergraduate can select from hundreds of different courses, many of them intro, but not only intro courses into various majors that then kind of give them a feel for different fields that they might study, you know, anything from Italian literature to sustainable infrastructure, that all of those classes would no longer find a place in their general education, could no longer count towards those required GE credits and thus towards their graduation. Now, if they go and pursue those majors and they're required for other reasons, then it would, of course, help them graduate. But they could not use them for GEs. Instead, all GE classes would be the same. Every single student, no matter their major, no matter what AP classes or IB classes they took in high school, would be required to take the same 8 classes. Two of those are really are already required. One of them is Foundations for Student Success. I've heard it described. I mean, the idea is that it gives you sort of a roadmap at BYU. Lots of schools are doing this now. It's sort of introduction to college life class. I have, however, heard that it's been sort of just turned into a class where you talk about general conference talks. I was not able to get a syllabus, so can't say one way or another. The other is, of course, American Heritage, which has been one that has been required for a very long time. This new proposal would tweak the title to American Heritage Inspired Constitutional Principles, but those two already exist. The other 6 do not, and they are supposed to be interdisciplinary and taught from various perspectives. So there's the other 6, I'll just give you the names because I think they're kind of illustrative of the tone that AVP Collins is trying to put forth. One is Faith in Human Flourishing. Another is called Languages, Tongues, and People, which is pretty vague, but the description that Collins gave talked about creating charitable global citizens. Another one would be Out of the Best Books, Preludes to the Restoration. Another, Foundations of Natural Sciences, a quantitative reading course, and effective communication course.
Why does BYU say they want to make this change?
So for one, according to AVB Collins, in this February recording where he announced it to the faculty, one he gives is to help students graduate in a timely way. They want more students to be able to have the BYU experience. Another is to streamline and homogenize the path to a diploma. In the February, it's like about an hour long, and those who go to our website and read the article, I actually link to the video. I've uploaded it into our own system, so people who are interested can go and hear all of the details there. But in it, Collins also describes it as and takes just kind of this sense that sameness, homogenization, making sure that everyone has the same experience, the same shared vocabulary, that seems very important to him as well. Finally, all of this, he says, is rooted in emphasizing the school's, quote, prophetic mission and ensuring that it maintains its unique religious identity and that students receive a uniquely LDS educational experience. And he says, in the past, too many general education courses have, quote, over-indexed on disciplinary content and under-indexed on the virtues and dispositions of disciple scholars, thus obscuring our uniqueness and making our general education difficult to distinguish from programs at other institutions. And he really laments that.
What are BYU professors saying?
So I talked to 12 about this from the one, and then a 13th, if you count someone who's recently retired. And there was some who just said, you know, I don't really have enough information yet to say one way or another. All of them agreed that they were being asked to respond to something with very little information. I mean, the entire video in which this was announced, Collins is just building up the case for it rather than providing details. And there have been some college level sit down conversations with faculty and with administration, but those, from my understanding, have largely been listening sessions on the part of the administration and haven't provided a whole lot of detail, except for that they hope that these will be small classes. So overwhelmingly, the teachers, the faculty I spoke with, said that it's very unclear what the details of any of this looks like. But uniformly, they said that prescribed classes, where the administration comes up with the syllabus and these professors are just told to execute, would really result in a poor classroom experience, in large part because you wouldn't have professors who were teaching according to their expertise. They would be required to talk about a wide range of subjects and cover a lot of different periods of history or different parts of a certain discipline in a way that would amount, as one person said, about the quality of a YouTube video that you can find just through Google. And so that was a recurring concern. So was this idea that it would deflate the value of the diploma by really saddling transcripts with these sort of eyebrow-raising, very idiosyncratic classes with names that don't translate well to, for example, someone who wants to go to business school at Wharton, or someone who wants to get a med school at the University of Chicago. Like, these are people's language, tongues. What does that mean? What were you doing at BYU? It would raise concerns there. Also make it very hard for people who transfer out to take any credits with them.
So we don't know what the overall reaction is, I suppose, to the academic vice president, but it's been enough of a response, I guess, that he's hitting pause, is what he's saying.
He is sort of hitting pause. He says he's going to make some meaningful revisions. I heard from professors. I mean, the professors I spoke with. So I spoke with some before he announced that he was going to make the change. And then I spoke with some of those same, but not all of the same ones, after the announcement. So I talked to most of the faculty after the initial announcement was made. And then I circled back with a handful of them after that email was sent out saying, we're going back to the drawing board. We've heard you. We know that there is some changes needed. And that has been viewed with some skepticism that Collins is willing to really make the kind of substantive changes needed. They're afraid that he's just going to come back with like different class names and call it good. But others are more hopeful.
Is there any forum for this for students to weigh in?
At this point, so there was this like whole long process that was going on since 2021 with, it looks like, maybe some student input, like a liaison or two, or I don't, it was kind of ambiguous as to whether students had any of that. But then it really radically changed, as I understand it, the whole feedback and development process for these classes. Once Collins really got involved. And no, it does not look like I sent questions to BYU. They didn't respond, asking if students have had a chance to weigh in. And then the faculty I talked to said that students haven't. So I got a non-answer from BYU and a negative answer from faculty.
This comes in the context of some changes in leadership of the church's educational system, right? Clark Gilbert, who was former Commissioner of Education, is now an apostle in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and they've named a successor to him.
And that is James Rasband. He was formerly AVP, I believe, before Collins. And that he replaces Clark Gilbert, who is now an apostle, like you said, and that is going to potentially lead to some changes too in how all of this is executed. CES, Commissioner of Education, their role is generally, I think it kind of depends on who's in the position and how they define it, but doesn't necessarily like go towards or have purview over curriculum. So it's unclear how that change would lead to it's not necessarily the case that that change in leadership will have much bearing on this, although it might.
Did Vice President Collings put a timeline on this?
Yeah, he said he'd be back with an edited version in April. All of this is a very condensed timeline compared to what is the norm for curricular reform at an institution of higher ed. Usually, like, input from faculty would be up to, you know, a year rather than a couple of weeks. And then there's so we'll see. Maybe after April, then there's another round of feedback and conversation and edits. That is not been specified one way or another.
Anything else you'd like to say about the story?
Just that I think it's one with that students, future students, and parents who hope to send their kids to BYU should be paying attention to.
Well, we've been talking with Salt Lake Tribune religion reporter Tamara Kemsley. Thank you for telling us about this.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
And you are listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. And coming up following a break, we're going to be talking with reporter Courtney Tanner. Another story about BYU. Here's the headline. After an indigenous student sued, BYU now says it will not require him to cut his traditional braids. We'll be talking about that story in just a couple of minutes. First, a reminder that this is the UPR Spring Fun Drive. In fact, it's the last day of the drive. We've been making good progress all week, thanks to you, if you've already taken care of that all-important donation. If you haven't, just a message that the drive closes at 7 o'clock tonight. We want to reach our goal by that time. We're so close. We are very close. 90% of the way there. That 10% remains. You can help us to close that final gap. And giving now ensures that UPR has the funds to continue in this new reality of zero federal funding. So, as you know, we've lost federal funding. We now have to spread that money that we would have received across the entire community. But that's what we've been doing. And very successfully, we want to continue that and make sure that UPR goes strong into the future. And here's the way you can do this. Here's the way you can help us to close that final 10% on these remaining hours of the drive. Go to upr.org, upr.org, or call 800-826-1495. Of course, you can get the mug. You can get the gift for good, the planting of five trees in the Amazon rainforest. Any of that, you could see all that at upr.org. Just choose one of those or ask the volunteer, 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Thank you to everyone who's making a difference. We're hearing from all over Utah, in fact, all over the nation. We heard from Homer, Alaska this morning. Other areas around Utah that we've heard from just this morning include Paradise and Mendon. We've heard from Tory and Vernal, Grace, Idaho. Wherever you're listening from, join your support with all of those who have been calling. Help us to close this remaining 10% gap. We're at 90% of the way there, so, so close, but not all the way there, to reach our goal in these final hours of the fund drive. UPR.org, UPR.org, or 800-826-1495. And thank you.
And the question is, what is one of the most popular locally produced programs on Utah Public Radio? The answer, Wild About Utah, a weekly program featuring fun, educational, and unique information about our state and all things wild. Also, the topic of an upcoming UPR-sponsored trivia night. UPR and Questionable Productions invite you to a Wild About Utah trivia night at the Cash Bar in Logan. Gather your teams and your trivia passion for an evening of fun competition with prizes. Your ticket price includes a pasta bar and your team's opportunity to prove you are wild about trivia and wild about Utah. Purchase your tickets now at upr.org for the Wild About Utah trivia night, happening on Tuesday, April 14th at the Cash Bar, 119 Main in Logan. Again, details at upr.org.
You're listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. We turn next to Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner. Courtney, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks, Tom.
So here's the headline. Days after an Indigenous student sued, BYU now says it won't require him to cut his traditional braids. So who are we talking about and how did he come to be at BYU?
Yeah, this is a student named Jaron Burscharger. He started at BYU this fall. He was actually kind of recruited before he even officially enrolled to go there to be part of a dance team that celebrates culture, including Indigenous cultures. And he is from Canada himself. He is Indigenous to the Kenai tribe up there in the Blackfoot Confederacy.
So he was, I think, recruited to be part of their BYU's Living Legends.
Exactly. Yeah. So he, Jaron is himself has won championships for hoop and fancy feather dancing. Was essentially, they really wanted him to be part of this dance team. And this dance team itself is really renowned. Honestly, it's BYU is known for it in a lot of places. They do different celebrations of different cultures and through dance.
So he says several people connected with the university assured him that he could keep his long hair, but I guess departments didn't talk to each other, and then he received word that he would need to cut his hair?
Yeah, kind of a troubling situation, a sad situation. Essentially, he talked to folks before officially enrolling, before accepting admittance at BYU, who said, your hair is okay. We understand that you're Indigenous, that this is part of your culture, but nothing was ever put in writing. And so, as soon as he is down in Provo and attending BYU, he's almost immediately flagged for having long hair, which goes against BYU's dress and grooming standards.
What is the dress and grooming standard with regard to hair?
So it's a longstanding rules that go in part of BYU's honor code. And the rules essentially require that men have neatly trimmed hair. And I will say that there used to be more specificity in the rules. It used to say that men had to have their hair cut above the ear. So that essentially your ear was showing. But they did drop that specific length language. It still says it needs to be neatly trimmed. It can't be extreme in style, which usually is interpreted. I mean, you can't have like a neon blue hair, anything that would be unnatural. So it's an interesting debate because Jaron, first charger in this case, says, my hair is neatly maintained. It's trimmed. It's, I keep it braided. I keep it clean. But there isn't a length prescription any longer. So it's a debate over what the rules actually mean.
So Jaron Firstcharger, part of his tribal, I guess, at least culture, maybe religion, long hair is important.
Right. So his tribe is also known as the Blood Tribe in Canada. He talked a little bit about some of these court filings, what long hair means. And for a lot of tribal members there, it's a spiritual sign. It's part of your identity. Hair to them holds memory. And so like you keep your hair long because it holds on to, what's happened to you. And it's a connection to their creator.
So Firstcharger applied for an exception, I guess. And what was the result of that?
Yeah, there's not a formal process actually to apply for a cultural exemption. There are hair exemptions granted at BYU, and those are on religious grounds. And they're typically there. You can ask for one if you're in like a production, a theater production, or if you have a medical reason. So there's three reasons, and culture is not among those. Jaron Firstcharger had said, this is part of my culture, but it's also part of my spirituality. So I think he would say it applies to the religious exemption too, but specifically there is no cultural exemption. And so he had sent a lot of letters to BYU. His mom had sent letters, his tribal leaders had sent letters. I mean, it was really a months-long effort essentially to try to get him a written exemption from BYU that wouldn't make him cut his hair to essentially follow the grooming standards.
What were tribal leaders saying in their sending their letters?
Yeah, I would strongly recommend anyone go read through. We put the full lawsuit on the case, but there's these really kind of strong, beautiful letters from tribal leaders. One of them is from specifically the Blood Tribe chief, who's often uses the name Traveler Plaited Hair. And he talks about how asking this student to cut his braids compromises his cultural integrity and could also infringe on some of his ability to take place in actual tribal practices, which I thought was really interesting. And then there was a second letter from what's known as the Union of British Columbia Indian Chiefs. And they called out this disparity where BYU essentially asked First Charger to be on this Living Legends cultural dance team, but then doesn't want him to practice his own indigenous culture. And so they call this abhorrent, and it's pretty strong language. And it was interesting to read these letters.
So BYU, at least the honor office, said you have to cut your hair or you're what, off the team and out of the university?
Yeah. So even after, you know, months of letter writing, months of asking, begging, meeting with administrators, essentially at the start of this month of March, this student says he was told, cut your hair or you're suspended. You're kicked off the dance team permanently and you're suspended from the university.
So then he filed a lawsuit, I think.
Yes. And I should say he was, you know, I don't want to say threatening it, but had it on the table for a while. And his law firm, which is local here in Orem, you know, sent a letter this month too after that kind of final ultimatum and was like, listen, like, BYU, we are going to file a federal lawsuit if you don't make an exemption. Like, this student has a right to express his culture and it's discrimination if you don't let him. And like, if you don't respond to us and grant an exemption, we will file the lawsuit. And then they say that BYU did not respond. And so, you know, they went ahead as they had said they would.
So now there's a settlement, I guess, an agreement?
Yes. And this is interesting. It came even as I was reporting this. So the lawsuit was filed Thursday of last week. And by Monday afternoon, by Monday at 2 p.m., there was essentially an agreement. So within 4 days, there was an agreement by BYU that said, hey, if you drop the lawsuit, we'll give you an exemption.
Mm-hmm. What are both sides saying? What is BYU saying about this?
Yeah, BYU put out a statement. I would say that if you're familiar with BYU's honor code enforcement and some of these past cases that it's had, this isn't the first time there's been kind of a cultural collision with this policy, this hair policy. But essentially BYU says, yeah, we can stay on the team, you can stay at the school, we have a resolution, but you need to recognize that these exemptions are rare. And this is just in this case. So don't expect like a lot of students to line up and get exemptions.
Mm-hmm. What is Mr. First Charger saying?
Yeah, I will say, I had heard about this case before the lawsuit was filed. I've known about it for a little while as he's been battling it, but he has been very reticent to talk, very scared of losing his status at the university, very worried about, you know, perturbing this resolution now. And so he has really spoken only through the lawsuit and through his attorneys. But I think they celebrated this as a win.
You mentioned the story a couple of previous cases. There's one at BYU Hawaii and then a separate one at BYU. Tell me about those.
Yes. So as I said before, if you're familiar with this, this story is going to sound similar to what's happened in the past. So in 2024, we reported on a student at BYU Hawaii who is Black, who had shoulder length locks and was told that he essentially needed to cut off his locks. But he said, you know, I'm Afro-Guyanese. These are important to me and my culture. He is still, I would say, his agreement is more tentative. He's still fighting in a lot of ways. They came to an agreement at BYU Hawaii that if he folded his locks up above his ears, that would be fine, that he could essentially move forward in this tentative agreement. And so it's kind of at that place for now, but it's not a formal exemption like this case with this Indigenous student. And then there was a second case back in 2018 with a student, Michael Tabongo. He is from Ecuador and an Indigenous tribe there. He did the same thing actually as this Indigenous student from Canada and went back and forth for a very long time with administrators doing the same thing, you know, letters from his tribal leaders, letters from himself, his parents, you know, saying, you know, my hair is important to my tribal culture. And he was also granted a very rare exemption at the time to keep his traditional long hair. And at the same time, BYU gave out a similar statement and said, hey, this is a very rare exemption.
Mm-hmm. You talked to some Native students who said they feel like they're the minorities of the minorities. Tell me what they're saying.
Yeah, this was a really interesting. BYU has a very small Native population. I looked at the numbers for this most recent fall enrollment at BYU, and it is 0.1%. So, like 0.1% of the enrollment at BYU is Native. And that's actually down from recent years, too. So when I reported on this other story, it was in 2024, and it was a group of Native students there. It was actually, the percentage was slightly higher, but they held this event, essentially, that said, we are the minority of all of the minorities on campus, and it's difficult. It's a challenge to be that at an LDS school.
Anything else you'd like to say about this story?
I think that this isn't the last we're going to see of this. I think that, you know, it's an issue that's kind of growing. And I think that there is a lot of people asking for BYU to be more open to cultural representation.
Well, we've been talking with Salt Lake Tribune reporter Courtney Tanner on Behind the Headlines. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
You are listening to Behind the Headlines, the weekly news roundup from Utah Public Radio and the Salt Lake Tribune. I'm Tom Williams. Thanks for joining us for this edition of the program. Thanks to my guest today, Salt Lake Tribune Data Enterprise reporter Megan Banta, religion reporter Tamara Kemsley, and reporter Courtney Tanner were with us. And I hope you'll join me again next week. Well, at the end of the program here, it's the last day of our spring UPR fund drive. Exciting times. We've made great progress toward our ambitious goal, higher goal than usual, because we've lost federal funding, and we need to ensure the sustainability, the strength of UPR going forward in this post-precision world. You've come through in a big way, and thank you so much, to the point where we're 90% of the way to our goal. Now, the problem is we're just hours away from the end of the drive. So that remaining 10%, that is up to us as a community. Thank you so much if you've helped us to get to that 90%. And for that 10% remaining, we hope that your call will be next to 800-826-1495, 800-826-1495. Here are a couple of comments. We heard from someone earlier this morning who said they love Behind the Headlines. Thank you so much. Love both sides of the aisle. That's a great program as well. A lot of the other programs, a person this hour who contributed says, thank you, Tom Williams. I love your Access Utah show. Also love Wild About Utah. Thanks for that as well. This was an interesting comment from a person who I think donated from Homer, Alaska. They said, as an Alaskan, I totally value this service, especially in a big spread out state like Alaska, and Utah is similar. Another person says, I love the local programming and Utah Climate Center forecasts. Hope you'll goes on to mention a couple of other programs. If you agree with that, especially if you love Behind the Headlines, we do notice when those calls come in, and this is a great time to support Behind the Headlines. And just UPR in general, on these waning hours of the drive, we need to make up that last 10%. We're 90% of the way there. So close. You can help us to close that gap, reach that goal, make UPR sustainable for the future. Here's how you do that. 800-826-1495 is the number to call. And I believe Debbie Andrews on the other end of that. You can talk to Debbie, 800-826-1495, or you can go to upr.org, upr.org. UPR's budget now relies 100% on community support, local dollars. The music, the news, online content, Behind the Headlines, all the programming relies 100% now on you. And you're coming through in a big way. Hope that we can punch this in for a touchdown, to use a sports metaphor. And you can help us do that with your call, quick, impactful call right now to 800-826-1495, or you go to upr.org. And thank you.